So, many years ago, probably, 4 or 5 years ago, we got a hankering in our family to raise baby chicks. And so, for Christmas, I told my daughters that they could have baby chicks. And so we went online to this place, I kid you not, it's called mypetchicken.com. And we picked up baby chicks, and my mother got so excited she had to pick out a chick too. My children each got to pick out one chick, and because I was the one buying the chicks, I decided I got two. So we ended up ordering 5 baby chicks, and they were so cute. Can I tell you, have you guys ever seen 2-day-old baby chicks? Because they overnight them to you, you know. The moment they hatch, they put them in a box and overnight them to you. And you get these things, they weigh as much as a cotton ball. Yeah, they weigh, I mean, you can't even feel them in your hand, and they peep, 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 and they hop all over. And because we didn't have a garage, we kept them in our living room in a little box with like a heat lamp, you know. And we had to keep getting bigger and bigger cages until they were old enough to live outside. They were so cute. They were just the sweetest little things. And we named them. We each got to pick out names. Faye named hers Gertrude. Rosemary named hers Princess. Is anyone surprised? My mother named hers Penelope. We call her Penny. And I named mine Bunny because she lays blue eggs, like the Easter Bunny. Get it? Get it? Bunny. Uh-huh. And Trogdor the Burninator. After the dragon. Look it up. You won't be disappointed. So, this is what we call a diaspora text. The reason why many of you, unless you've been in Bible study, have not heard of it before is because it is not in your Bible. It's in the Catholic Bible, and it's considered a sacred text, but it's not in the Protestant Bible because it falls in that time period between when the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, was canonized, but before Christ and all of the Gospels and the Acts and the letters of Paul could be written. There's a 300-year gap there. And there's a gap for a couple of reasons, partly because the language had changed. So when they decided to translate everything that was in the Hebrew Bible into Greek, and at that point made decisions about what was in and what was out, and they had a solid body of work. And it wasn't, once you have a solid body of Holy Scripture, it's very hard to change it, to add things. But if there's also a time period between the time that the people returned back after exile and the time when Christ walked the earth. So during that time period, we have all of these texts coming out because so many people had been exiled by the Assyrians and the Babylonians. They went off. Now, a lot of them returned to Jerusalem when they were able to during the time of the Persians, but a lot of them stayed and remained in pockets around the Middle East. We have them in Africa. We have them as far as Russia, off towards India, up north in Europe. And those folks wrote an extraordinary body of literature that we don't have examples of otherwise in the text. And it's called a diaspora text because it's written by the people in the diaspora. And what's wonderful about diaspora texts is it asks that question, how does your culture and your religion survive if you are removed from your homeland, separated from your people, and you're an ethnic and religious minority in a much larger empire? How do you maintain your sense of who you are? It's a great question, and we see Tobit struggling with that in this story. Now, we read just the first chapter of Tobit, but you see him talk about how he was exiled, and he's struggling with his neighbors. He's struggling to maintain his own sense of what is right and what is righteous and what he's supposed to do in a situation where he's being penalized by the empire for doing just that. So that is the big question. How do you live and survive and maintain your cultural heritage when you have been forcibly removed from your homeland and you cannot go back? So, when we look at race relations today, we see a very similar problem. We have a people, multiple generations past now, that were forcibly removed from their homeland and now can no longer go back, not easily, at all. And they are caught in this paradox where they're expected to assimilate completely, right? And at the same time, they're not allowed to assimilate. We expect you to be just like us so we're not disturbed by your differentness, but we're not going to let you be part of us. Do you see the problem? This is the crux of what the people in the diaspora were struggling with, where they wanted to maintain their cultural heritage but were punished for doing so. They wanted to assimilate, but they were not allowed to do so. And because they were ethnically, physically different looking, it was easy to target them. It was easy to stigmatize them. It was easy to keep them separate. So we love these baby chicks. Can I just tell you, we took them, we were like show and tell for every single classroom in the elementary school because Rosemary had to have them at her classroom. Faye had to have them at her classroom. Other classrooms wanted to see them. And for quite some time, they just stayed in the office one day because all the staff wanted to come in and check out these baby chicks. They were so cute. Neighbors stopped by. Everybody came by to see these baby chicks. And they were adorable. And they were growing, and we would let them out of their cage and put little bits of chicken kibble, you know, on the floor, and they would peck it, and they quickly became convinced that they were indoor chickens, that they were really people, right? They could hang out in the kitchen, they could sit on our laps, they could hang out with us while we were watching television because it was winter time and it was still too cold for them to go out by themselves. So they spent the first 12 weeks of their life inside our living room and became convinced that they were people. And at the same time, they weren't people and they couldn't stay inside the house, and trying to convince them, we're still trying to convince them that they are not indoor chickens. If you make the mistake while the chickens are out of leaving the back door open, they listen for it. And they will come inside and hang out in the kitchen. And if you try to shoo them out, they'll argue with you. Like, no, I don't think you understand. See, we're people. We expected them to assimilate because we wanted them to be friendly and eat out of our hand and sit on our laps. But when push came to shove, we get to live in the house and they need to stay outside. Do you see the problem? And we, as much as we love them, we recognized at a certain point that these chicks had been removed from their natural habitat. Wherever they farm chickens, you know, the mother hens lay their little eggs and then they're taken away and put in an incubator. They don't ever get to see their mother. As soon as they hatch, they're put in a box and shipped to people. And even if I wanted to ship them back, I couldn't. I couldn't find that particular chicken's mother and send it back and say, good luck, go live with this other chicken. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. So... when we read the book of Tobit, we see everything that is inherent with people that have been forcibly removed from their homeland, all the problems that go along with that. They are an ethnic and religious minority living in a much larger empire. In this case, he talks about it being part of this Assyrian empire, and he's living now in Nineveh, which was the capital of the empire, living as an ethnic and religious minority. And he talks about how his views differ from other people that were also forcibly removed, especially as the generations passed. People's minds changed. And as he's trying to maintain his cultural identity, other people are saying, assimilate, assimilate. Why didn't you just give up all of this nonsense about going to temple, following the rules, following the prescriptions for Judaism, and just be like the Assyrians? And you see him struggling within his own people how to reconcile this. And at the same time, there is a severe disenfranchisement. He does not get to live the same life that the Assyrians live. He has employment sometimes, but it depends on the whims of whoever is in charge at that moment. One king really liked him. The next king was after him. The third king said, all right, you can come on back. Can you imagine, based on your political leaders being in, out of employment? And we see that there's a different set of laws. Just like today, we have laws on the books, but they apply differently depending on who they are being enforced against. And we hear during this story that the king is targeting the Israelites, and he is slaughtering them and throwing them over this wall and just dumping the bodies in Tobit. What gets him into trouble is not his following all of the dietary laws, but sneaking out in the middle of the night to collect those bodies and give them a proper burial. And when the king finds out what he's doing, he puts a death sentence on his head. Do you see that? This was not as simple as people disagreeing over dietary laws. This was a very serious problem that affected their lives. It affected their livelihood, and it affected their physical safety. And at a certain point, he has to go into hiding, and he's separated. He says all of his property is taken away. He never gets that back. He's separated from his wife and from his son. And he has to do that in order to save his own life. So, we discovered at a certain point that chickens must have a flock. We didn't discover this early enough because at a certain point we went to a feed store to pick up more chicken supplies. You would not believe how many supplies they burn through with the bedding, keeping them in your living room. You put them outside, they're fine. In your living room, you have bedding you have to change. You have water bottles that they kept outgrowing. We had to get bigger and bigger water bottles. They were burning through chicken feed, and they have the chick feed, but after a certain point, they have to have hen feed. And so we're going to this supply store. Well, at the supply store, when we went to go pick up the supplies, they had just gotten their shipment of baby chicks for sale. And so the girls and I are there, and they've got all of these big crates filled with all of these peeping chicks separated by breed. Now, of course, we had to stop and look. Of course, we had to ask if we could hold some. My girls are saying, isn't this one cute? Isn't this one cute? And all the little red flags were going off in my mind. Danger, Will Robinson, danger. And of course, we ended up bringing home another baby chick. Okay? This one, it was completely my fault. I would love to blame my children. But the moment I said it was okay for them to hold one, I knew what I was doing. And then I discovered that they had a silver-laced Wyandotte. That's what they said it was. Little chicken that had this particular color of feathers that I just love so much that mypetchicken.com did not sell. So we bought a little baby hen, little tiny little thing, and we brought it home to add to the flock. And what we didn't realize was that once a flock is established, you cannot add more chickens to the flock. You can't add more chickens to the flock. And so we tried to let them play together, and we learned what pecking order means very clearly, because the big chickens would peck on the baby chicken, right? And she was too little to defend herself. And no matter what we tried to do, we could not integrate little Luna, we called her Luna, into the flock. And so this chicken was going to have a hard time learning how to be a chicken without other chickens. Flying blind, really, except chickens can't fly. So, I have talked before about this interesting pattern in the Old Testament, not New Testament, Old Testament only, where we see again and again male characters that go blind in different stories. Tobit is one of those people. We heard he went blind under this very strange circumstance. Sparrows on a wall, him sleeping underneath, films in his eyes, boom, he goes blind. Very strange circumstances. But when you look at all of the circumstances surrounding these men's lives, Samson, the men of Sodom and Gomorrah, Jacob, right before they go blind, they are generally experiencing similar symptoms. First of all, they find that they are estranged from their community. They feel that there is something that has separated them from God. They find that they have lost their livelihood, lost their finances, and have become completely powerless around that. There is a threat to their life, and there is generally a threat to their lineage. Not only will they die, but there's a very distinct possibility that their future generations will not exist. And we see all of that in Tobit. And we see all of that in the story of Jacob. We see that in the story of Samson. We see that in the story of the men of Sodom and Gomorrah. And there are at least four more. And so when we look at what's happening in this story, and we look at the patterns that we see again and again in the Hebrew Bible, what is revealed is a problem of refugeeism. We see again and again this metaphor that the blind man in the story is representative of all of the symptoms of exile. You are disconnected from your community. You are subject to gross injustices. You feel like you are estranged from God. We see a lot of the lamentations. Why is God punishing us for this? Is how they start to frame it. We see threat to life. We see threat to lineage. For example, Tobit's son, as the story progresses, cannot find a wife. And Tobit wouldn't want him to marry anyone in that town anyway because they're not following the same religious prescriptions that he's following. This is a real problem in his mind. How is the lineage going to continue if his son can't marry? And so on. And so Tobit, it's no surprise that he suddenly becomes blind because there is no way forward. He cannot see a way forward. All he can see is darkness and uncertainty, very much like a blind person at this time period, struggling along without all the resources that we have now for blind folk. Does that make sense? This is very similar to what we see with the problems of immigration today because there are so many refugees coming into this country. And at the same time, the same ostracism that Tobit is experiencing within his community is very similar to what immigrants experience now. How quickly we forget that we were once immigrants. Am I right? Oh, we don't want any of these immigrants with all their problems and their different languages and all of their crime and all of their blight. We don't want any of that coming to our country. Only the real citizens get to be here. Oh, we forget that two generations ago, our grandparents were going through the exact same thing. And that's identical to what God says again and again and again throughout the Bible. Do not forget, he says, that you were once refugees and aliens out of the land of Egypt. Treat the alien and the sojourner among you well. Embrace them, give them sanctuary, give them community, help them. Do not forget who you were. Because he knew exactly what we know, which is exactly what Tobit knew. Within one or two generations, immigrants forget. They forget all of their struggles. They forget what it was like. And they want to keep the good stuff for themselves and throw out the new incoming people. Does that make sense? We all know how this story ends because it happens again and again and again throughout history. So, Luna was not accepted by those chickens, and we had to figure out what we were going to do. The problem was Luna was lonely, and Luna was peeping constantly. Okay? Peep, 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 peep. And during the day, we would play with her. I used to take her to work with me. Another minister that was in that area at that time, I remember having a phone call with him, and I had the chicken with me in my office in a cage. Couldn't leave her home alone. She'd just peep all day long. She was terrified. Had her in my office, sort of, you know, and somehow she hopped out of that cage. I didn't realize she could flutter at that point. She'd grown so quickly. And I was talking, yes, and so on the 15th, I'd be happy and we can get together for coffee and I'll bring my notes. Oh my God, hold on just a second. There's a chicken loose in my office. Wait a second. And I threw the phone down, chased this chick around, put her back in her cage, and then got back on the phone. And this guy said, boy, this is just never a dull moment around there, is it? I said, no, it's not. It's definitely not. So we were doing everything we could to comfort Luna. And it wasn't enough. So what happens in the story of Tobit? I'll summarize the next 15 chapters for you. God sends an angel, the angel Raphael, down. He comes in disguise and pretends to be a long-lost distant relative of Tobit's, who promises to take the son on a journey to go fetch that money he hid in Medea. Remember that money, that bag of silver he hid, but they couldn't get to it because of international disputes? He promises to take the son. And in the process, the son finds not only a wife who's of good moral character, a righteous family, but also finds the cure to Tobit's blindness and his money. And when he comes back into town with his wife and the money and the cure to Tobit's blindness, the community embraces them. Oh, they cheer him when he comes in. And at that moment, then and only then, is Tobit's blindness able to be healed, because he's re-embraced by community. He has his power back. He has his family back. The threat to his life is gone, and the threat to his lineage is gone. All of the symptoms of exile have disappeared, and his sight is magically restored. This is God's promise, that God will send people as guides, angels as guides. Did you know that in Hebrew, the word for angel just means messenger of God? That's what the word is, messenger of God. It's not until we get to the Greek that we have this word angelos, angel. When we are lost, when we are not in our community, when our ties have been severed for whatever reason, God sends us angels in disguise and promises to restore us to community, promises to remove the threat of death, reassures us that his love is everlasting and unconditional. And then and only then can we see a way forward. So, one night, I think it was on her second day, we couldn't stand it anymore. Luna was peeping at night, because at a certain point we had to go to bed. And so I found myself around midnight putting the chicken to sleep. Like putting her to bed. Not putting her to sleep. No, that is not what I meant. Putting her to bed, right? I had a little blanket for her, and I would sing and I would stroke her little head. And I would put the little blanket over the chicken and pet her until her little eyes closed. And then I would tiptoe away back to my bed. And the second I got under the covers, I would hear peep, 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 peep. 4 times in a row I put this chicken to bed. 4 times till 2 o'clock in the morning I found myself singing to and petting a chicken in my living room. And the next morning, my mother came out. We were at my mother's house. My mother came out, and she found me on her divan sofa. She has these tiny little things that are about long enough that if I sleep on it, my legs will still completely hang off the other side, curled up like this, chicken's cage empty, chicken gone. And she said, "Oh, my God, what are you doing on the couch, and where's the chicken?" And I said, "Shh. It took me 4 hours to get her to sleep. Don't you wake her up." And I lifted the blanket up so she could see the sleeping chicken that had slept under my armpit all night long. God sends us very strange, sometimes angelic guides to give us community, to embrace us, to find unorthodox ways to create what we have lost, whether it was by choice, by accident, or by force. That's why churches are such weird places, but they feel so good, because we're all exiles. We've all lived in different places than where we started, or from where our parents started. Many of us are from other churches that we are not with anymore. And we find ourselves here. And yet, when it works well, we find that community. We find that safety net. We find that sanctuary. We find that unconditional love through other people that God sends to us. So to answer the question, how do you live and survive and maintain your cultural heritage when you have been forcibly removed from your homeland and can't go back? Sometimes you can't go back. Sometimes you can't go back. Sometimes God simply creates for us a new community. A new community in Christ. And then we learn how to be that community for other people. Instead of becoming the immigrants that forget and shun, we become the community that learns how to be a community, the recipients of that community, that can then embrace others. So, after 3 nights of sleeping on the couch with a chicken under my arm. 3 nights. And I got leg cramps too, because that couch was so short. three nights, we went back to the feed store and we bought another chick to be part of Luna's flock, Ibu. It's French for owl, because she looked like a little owl, my children said. So Luna and Ibu formed a flock. They were close enough in age, and they were only a few days old. They formed a flock. And what was so funny was that because Luna was probably 5 days older, that's a significant size difference for chickens because they grow so fast. So little Ibu kept going underneath Luna as though Luna were the mother hen. And Luna thought it was the weirdest thing. She kept kind of going like this, you know, and trying to back off because little Ibu was almost as big as she was. And at a certain point, she finally just accepted it. And they embraced each other. And that first afternoon, you know, after they'd played for a while, had some food, had some water, had some social time, they both cuddled up together on the little roost and took a nap together. And that house was blissfully silent for like an hour. And at night, they slept through the night. And they found a way to be each other's mother hen. Even though, as we found out, much to our surprise, 7 weeks later, at 4 o'clock in the morning, they were both roosters. And yet, they were able to be each other's community and learn how to be mother hens and learn how to be people. They were able to maintain their identity and assimilate and experience love and give love all at the same time. Even though they had brains the size of a walnut. Can I get an amen to that? Yeah.